Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent and it is wonderful to have your company today for episode
72.
This week on Toy Power, we dive straight into a modern toy line retrospective on Masters of the Universe classics. Joining me in the Toy Power studio today, I've got Darren.
Hello one and all, thank you for joining us once again.
Ben.
G'day, g'day.
Frank.
Hello.
And a very special guest, we've got Danielle Galerta joining us as well. Welcome, Danielle.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, definitely awesome to have you on the show. We're hugely excited. And as we do with all guests on Toy Power, we'll start off with a bit of a get-to-know-you segment. The only thing you need to do for this segment is to answer the questions as if you're 10 years old.
Oh, I will be happy to do that. But I just want to say I've been diving into your archives of past episodes and have been greatly enjoying listening to them. When I first heard about your podcast a while back, I'm a bit computer challenged, so I had a difficult time figuring out how to download, because I usually like listening at the gym to podcasts, and I was trying to figure it out. So I did listen on the computer, and then when I talked to Trent recently, I finally figured out how to download like a bunch of episodes. Oh, so I've been listening to your past episodes, and they're really fun. I've really been enjoying
them. Thank you very much. Appreciate that means a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We know how well great. You do great on show. Google Dinner as well, so it means a great deal to hear that.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, when we started up this podcast, my biggest inspiration for, the way we conduct ourselves and go about it was, for me, Roast Google Dinner. It was pretty much the one and only podcast I would listen to. So, like, I hold you guys and Val in very, very high esteem. And just the caliber of the way you guys present, the quality of the show, and the guests that you would get on, must listen for me whenever. And I was sort of keep refreshing the feed to see when the next episode's coming. I'm like, I've still got it subscribed, and I'll scroll down. No new episodes. So,
That's all Val. That quality of the show is is mostly all Val. I mean, he does all the editing, and he gets the guests for the show, and he's very much a perfectionist. So he does a really good job of making the show sound very polished. Unfortunately, he's been very busy lately. So we actually, I think we have like 3 or 4 shows that we taped that never have been released, including one with Brian Flynn, as I recall, like a year ago. still hasn't been released, but he's been so busy. He hasn't been able to get them out, but hopefully he will soon. And I hope we eventually get back to recording more shows, because it's always fun doing that.
Yeah, for sure. We would love that. We'll head into some questions now. I think Darren will take us through our questions as a 10-year-old, Danielle.
So as a 10-year-old girl, Danielle, which toys influenced you?
Toys from Masters of the Universe or toys in general?
Anything in general, Masters of the Universe, your line.
Okay, well, I would say, I've thought about this before, like any toy that has a lot of different characters all together in a group somehow appealed to me, like a diverse group of characters. Like Masters of the Universe was my first kind of obsession. Like I loved all the different characters. I got into it like back in 82 when I saw that Castle Grayskull commercial, and all the colorful different Beastman and He-Man and the castle. It just like captivated me. But I also collected like a lot of those. This is going to kind of lame, but they used to have these like little plastic jungle animals and farm animals. I collected those too, because I just liked all the different little animals, and making little dioramas of all the different, I'd make like little zoo scenes with all the different little animals. Yeah, and then I liked Strawberry Shortcake a lot, I think for similar reasons to Masters of the Universe, which is a like polar opposite if you think about it. But, you know, but it's like, but they're so colorful and there are so many different little characters in that world that I really liked it. And then I guess, you know, I was, I guess as Stephen King said, I suckled on the glass teat. I watched television way too much as a child. So I watched all of those 80s shows and I had figures from a lot of that, like G.I. Joe. I had some G.I. Joes. I had Thundercats. I didn't have too many Thundercats. I had a couple, but I watched the show back then. And kind of, I think the only 80s thing that I didn't get into was Transformers. Ooh. I watched Gem. I liked Gem. But Transformers, for some reason, it just didn't catch my attention for some reason. But all of those other shows, I'd get some toys from each of those periodically. Yeah.
Was it the size displacement that Megatron suffered, turning from a giant robot into a tiny handgun?
That's called.
I just couldn't tell them apart.
It's called mass shifting trend. There's nothing. Right. It's a very sound scientific concept.
Okay. I'm sure it is.
So, what was your favorite film as a 10-year-old? What were you growing up watching?
Favorite film as a 10-year-old? I grew up watching old horror movies. Big, big surprise. I loved old horror movies because my uncle was a big monster kid in the 60s. So as a kid, he would show me like The Bride of Frankenstein and The Wolfman and things like that. So I was... And he liked a lot of the old comedies with the Marx Brothers and Laurel and Hardy and things. So I grew up, I was displaced in terms of the decade in which I was born because I was watching all these old movies, but which I still love to this day. But a lot of like in the 80s, Ghostbusters, loved Ghostbusters. The 89 Batman is one of my favorite films of all time. I love Batman. Like, I mean, that summer was just a wild summer. Batmania was all over the place. And Splash, I remember I was obsessed with Splash. I wanted to be the mermaid from Splash. Like, I was like, really obsessed. I was really obsessed with the movie Splash back then. E.T., Gremlins. Oh, I loved Gremlins. I had a Gremlins lunchbox in the 80s. I wish I still had it. It was like a really cool lunchbox.
Danielle, can I ask, how do you feel about sci-fi movies like Aliens and Predator? And where do you sit on that? Or are you more of a horror fan?
Oh, I love sci-fi too. Yeah. I love the Trinity, you know, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. Like, I love all of that stuff. So, yeah, I love Predator, Aliens. I mean, all of those, Alien and Aliens, Terminator, all of that stuff was just really cool, really cool stuff. You know, I feel like I wish there were more films like that nowadays. You know, I every once in a while a movie will come out that I'm like, oh, this is a pretty good sci-fi or horror film, but they seem to not. I don't know. In the 80s, it just seemed like a constant stream of those types of movies were coming out.
Yep.
And I guess the final question, being a big horror fan and getting into horror as a young girl, what was sort of as a 10-year-old, I guess, the scariest moment that you can remember from your childhood?
The scariest moment I remember from childhood. It was more of a real life thing than a movie. And it was, again, my uncle, my creepy uncle who introduced me to all he's not creepy he's actually he just liked horror movies so much that he would he would try to scare me with stuff like so one time he dressed up as a vampire, like as Dracula, and he showed up. The sun was set. I remember it was getting dark and the sun was setting and there was a knock. First they were like howling. He was howling. I heard howling outside
setting the scene.
Window, right? This is going to explain why I need therapy. And why I am the way I am. Because, like, you know, you'd hear like outside and it's getting dark and I'm like, what's going on, you know? And I was a child, I was young, I was like five years old, maybe four, and so all of a sudden there's this ominous knock at the door, and my mom goes to answer the door, and there in his full glory was my uncle dressed with a cape, pale makeup, with his hair slicked back, the whole nine yards. He was dressed as a vampire. And I freaked out. I just slammed the door. I ran behind my mom, slammed the door, and ran into my room. And then he went around to the front of the house and knocked on the door again. And of course, my parents were highly entertained by this.
Your uncle sounds like he gave you one heck of a childhood.
Oh, he scared the hell out of me with that. But it was part of his, you know, his monster mania, which he then passed on to me because he started giving me his famous Monsters of Filmland magazines, what Fari Ackerman did back in the day. He held on to those. He passed them on to me, and he introduced me to comic books and just cool pop culture, superheroes, things like that. Like it was weird because when I was in school, I was into a lot of, other than He-Man and sort of the stuff that was going on at that time, like a lot of the older stuff. Like my uncle introduced me to the TV show Dark Shadows, which I don't know if you guys had in Australia. I don't think they had it, but it was like a 60s vampire horror series, like gothic horror. Not the horrible Johnny Depp remake.
I listened to all the podcasts for your roast Google dinner and how you're talking about it, and then when it came out and how disappointed you were and things. So yeah, I can relate. We were all there during that time. So we were living through you what the rating of the film was like. So yeah, snapshot.
That was disappointing to say the least.
They're trying to reboot some of the Universal Monsters property now.
That's failed.
Is that dead
it's,
and
it's
gone?
Officially gone.
Daniel, did you see the Mummy, Tom Cruise version?
No, I didn't go see it. It was the Dark Universe.
It was kind of interesting. There was a moment in it where it just felt like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because Russell Crowe was
Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah, he was Dr. Jekyll, and then he's like, "Oh, he just they go into this secret lab, and it's all like steampunk style kind of thing." And yes, and then there's other people like you who have powers, and I'm like, "Oh, what are you meant to be like, Nick Fury? Like, come on, man!"
The franchise builder.
It was very. The actual movie itself wasn't too bad. I mean, you got to get past Tom Cruise first of all, but yeah, just that really ham-fisted trying to, hey, don't forget this is a backdoor pilot to all these other movies. Nah, I'm done.
It's gone.
Like,
didn't make it.
I saw the trailer, and when I saw the trailer, I was like, is this a remake of The Mummy, or is this a Mission Impossible movie?
It's like, what is going on here?
Because it didn't look like a horror movie to me in the trailer. And I don't know why. It's like Universal. Like, I was so excited back when they announced that Van Helsing was coming out. I was like, they're making a movie about Van Helsing? What a brilliant idea. There's never been a movie like specifically about Van Helsing. And what a great concept. But then I saw the movie and I was like, it had its moments, but I felt like they went way too much with the CGI and trying to be a big action blockbuster. And I wish they had focused more on the characterization, because Van Helsing is such a compelling character in the films. Like Peter Cushing in the Hammer films is such a great Van Helsing, you know, and I wish they would have kind of taken that idea and extrapolated from that rather than, you know, Wolverine in Victorian clothes.
Yeah, it's not too often we need to apologize for Hugh Jackman, but yeah, that was pretty bad.
Very good.
I guess it was just the CGI kind of bothered me.
Yeah,
I love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Yeah. In the X-Men movies, but I don't mind seeing him with his shirt off for sure.
Nice.
Very brilliant. Yeah, that is fantastic. Thanks for indulging us in that session. We love getting to know our guests, so that has shone a light on you, and hope the therapy is going well to resolve some of those issues your uncle inflicted on you. But that's wonderful.
I'll have to send my uncle a link to the podcast.
What I love, I mean, I've got two young children, and it's sort of, I know there'll be a Shearer Netflix show coming. I probably won't expose them to the new Thundercats Roar show that's coming out. But to take them back and show them, you know, old versions of Thundercats, old versions of Masters, and just to see how they connect and love the property. It's just wonderful that your uncle did that to you with the properties that he loved from his childhood. And it's that you growing up not only got into the 80s properties, but also the properties that he shared with you. So that's sort of just a wonderful story.
I think it's important for, I mean, if this She-Ra show doesn't connect, I mean, the 2000X He-Man show didn't succeed, sadly, you know, and it's kind of up to people with children like yourself to kind of just sort of introduce your kids to the things you like, and they might like it, they might not, you know, but it's the way to kind of keep things going, I think, is to pass things to the next generation, you know, that in that way.
Definitely.
And hopefully the new She-Ra cartoon will bring in a whole bunch of new kids.
Oh,
you know?
I'm very excited. I've got two young girls, so, and they're at the perfect age, 6 and 4, ready to rock and roll. So I am super pumped to show them. And they already know of She-Ra through my collection, and I've got a few extras that they play with. They're big into unicorns and things, obviously Swiftwind. So I'm really hoping, you know, all those elements are prevalent in this new show, and that, you know, it's a hit straight off the press. But only time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, and just to round that out, one of the things we've always done with my oldest son is read him three bedtime stories every night. And one of the things I busted out on request was the Dark Horse compilation of mini comics. and we would read, you know, three of those a night. And we literally went from the first story in that right all the way through to the end of that over a period of time. And just respect to Dark Horse for, you know, publishing these works, getting all of these iconic strips and stories from the past and putting them in one compilation that we can then use to pass on to the next generation. And I think that's a lovely segue to talk about a couple of other Dark Horse books that you may have had some large involvement in, particularly with the comic strips book. But, you know, the encyclopedia is just an absolute, you know, work of love. We've often talked to the Dark Horse books on the podcast because we are just blown away by the amount of love that goes into them. And we just haven't seen that quality in sort of other books
ever
because it's just the fan community just brings something to this. That character encyclopedia, I mean, it's just got every character that's kind of ever featured in any Master Universe product. So the dedication to kind of pull that together is just phenomenal. So we just thought we might take the opportunity to chat on kind of what went into those publications from your end, and in particular, the amount of effort that went to pulling all those comic strips and newspaper comic strips together for the Dark Horse publication.
Absolutely, yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. I mean, that was the Dark Horse projects were, Val got involved in that early on with Dark Horse because Val, you know, he has his own company, MV Creations, and they published the 2000X comic back in the day. And so he's worked in comics for a number of years, and he secured a job through Dark Horse and brought me on as an advisor on the art of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe book. So Val and I kind of were advisors on that book and gave some input and stuff and helped kind of with putting that together. And then subsequently the next most the kind of demanded book that for years was the mini comics book. Like people, that was the one thing people kept saying, they'd wanted a collection of the mini comics. So Val brought me in on that to do the interviews. Val kind of managed that project, and our editor Daniel Chabon over at Dark Horse, who was the editor on all of these books, was just a fantastic person to work with. Like he was really helpful, but he kind of let us do our thing too. Like he just kind of he would approve things and put things through and would review things with us, but he just kind of he knew that we were like the very passionate about this, and we're kind of working on it. So Val got me on that with doing the interviews on the mini comics book. And then while we were working on those, I think it was like we were still working on the art book at the time, we had Chris Weber and Karen Wilson as guests at PowerCon. And Chris Weber was the writer on the He-Man and the Masters of the Universe newspaper comic strips. And Karen Wilson, his wife, was the editor. And I first found out about the comic strips, I think it was, I didn't actually have the comic strips as a child. I found out about them in the 90s, like when the He-Man community was first kind of coming around through like the mailing list and the early days of the Adam Tyner website, which eventually became He-Man.org. Around that time, there were a lot of people like selling on Usenet groups, like news groups and things like this. And I remember somebody mentioning they were selling some He-Man comic strips, and there were some pictures even of them. And I didn't buy them. I wish I had at the time, but I said, oh, there was a He-Man comic strip. How about that? You know, and it always kind of stuck in my mind. And over the years, you know, there were dribs and drabs of information that would kind of leak out. People would post some images here and there. Dusan Mitrovic, who is a very prominent collaborator of with James Etok on doing, you know, they were helping with the YouTube channel and stuff. Dusan read. Yeah, he read the comic strip in Serbia when he was a kid. And so I got to talking with him a little bit about that, about the different storylines and stuff. And so when we had Chris Weber and Karen Wilson at PowerCon, they mentioned to me that they saved a lot of the newspaper strips that they would cut out of the newspaper in Los Angeles at the time. And so we got to talking, and it turned out, you know, the newspaper strip ran for several years. It turned out it ran for 4.5 years, and every single day, and newspapers all over the world. It was syndicated by Mattel for a time. You know, Mattel and Filmation collaborated early on, put together this newspaper strip starting in 86, and they sent it to newspapers all over the world. So when the Dark Horse thing started, I mentioned to Val, hey, it would be really cool if we could get these newspaper strips together. And initially I think we talked about releasing them on the org, like one per day, but then since the book thing was happening, where I was like, well, you know, it would be really cool if we could do a book of the newspaper strips. So we went to Chris Weber and Karen Wilson's house. They were kind enough to let us visit them, and we brought a scanner over, and they had these photo albums from the 80s filled with newspaper strips. So we just started scanning all of the newspaper strips that they had. It turned out they only had like half of them, though. So we were able to get like half of the strips, and then we were like, okay, we got to find the rest, you know. So I'm sorry, I'm just going on and on about this.
Don't. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So you found
we're hanging on every word.
So you ended up, long story short, you ended up finding about what 95% of them in the end through correlations with international fans and things like that. My question is, since you published this book, because this book is now over a year old or so, have you found any other, the ones that were missing or anything, or have you had any connections that might have them, or, you know, is there any light at the end of the tunnel that you'll have all of them together at one point in time or not?
We had to turn to microfilm. So this turned into like this worldwide hunt. We eventually went to the Library of Congress, and Val and I and Eric Marshall scanned high resolution scans of microfilm, and we were able to obtain almost the entire strip. We were missing at the end 35 comic strips, and luckily Chris and Karen kept the scripts that Chris wrote. He wrote like movie scripts, so I was able to call sort of synthesize summaries of those missing days. So we wound up with missing 35 strips. Well, Chris and Karen came to PowerCon last year, and they had located a bunch of proofs from the syndicate who sent the newspaper strip around the world would send proofs to Chris and Karen before they sent them out to newspapers. And they found them in a file cabinet and that they had in storage, wow. Right? So now here's what happened. They told, when they got to PowerCon, they told me, we found these proofs in a file cabinet. We're going to just give them, we're going to give them away to fans for a donation that we're going to put towards hurricane relief, because there was a hurricane that happened at the time. And I said, oh, I'd like to take a look at those. And Chris, it was not their fault. He thought they were from the early part of the strip. He said, mm-hmm. I said, there's, in case there's anything missing. He said, oh no, these are from the first storyline, so it's nothing that's missing from the book. Well, eventually I got around to their table and I looked down, and the first thing I saw was a page with six of the missing.
Oh, wow.
And I said, these are missing strips. And he said, no, they're not. Those are from, I said, no, these are from like the last storyline from the New Adventure storyline. And so I flipped through and I found another page with six more missing strips on it. So I found 12 of the missing strips right off the bat. Wow. And so we put out a call to fans at the con, if anybody bought strips at their table, to please come and see me or to see them, to let us know. And nobody at the con, I mean, a few fans came and showed me what they had, and it was nothing that was missing. But when I got home, I posted it on Facebook, and Stephen Giblin, who's a fan in the He-Man community, reached out to me, and he had purchased a page. So he had six more missing strips, because there were six per strip. Oh, wow. Per page.
So that's over
yeah,
half.
So,
yeah.
So he sent it. He was nice enough to send it to me, actually, the strips. I just wanted a scan, but he actually sent me the original. So I have, since the book's publication, acquired 18 of the missing strips. So we are still missing 17 of them. And some of those were probably got purchased at that PowerCon. Oh, so if anybody's wow. listening who got those strips, please contact us. Sure. Let us know.
Yeah. Well, my mum's got an old filing cabinet. Maybe I'll just have a rummage through there and see what I can find.
We should all get into our local state library and see what's on my
Yeah, well, Darren and I have
that. Like old
yeah, well, Danielle shed some light on that point, because I was telling Danielle that Darren and I were down at the local state library here in South Australia and looking through for old advertisements, and obviously keeping our eye out for any cartoon strips that were coming up. And there was a publication, it sounded like it was a Western Australian publication, that did have or did yeah. run the Masters. I'm not sure if that went right up till the end, because they probably sort of petered out towards the end of the...
It's probably here, because we have interstate newspapers here at our state library from right around the country. Mm. So that's probably here.
Yeah, there's an article on the .org which does reference the publication. So yeah, we're certainly well versed in how to use the microfilm now.
We are. we should get into it. Nothing like researching your history in the state library, and there's nothing more pertinent to me than Masters of the Universe history.
Yeah, it was called the Western Mail, and it did go out of print at some point, the Western Mail, but I don't know how far they went in carrying the He-Man strip. But if you guys find anything from if you have the book, the later strips are where we start to have gaps. So if it's like in the 1990, 1991 range, that's where we're missing some of those.
Cool. Yeah, if we find anything, we'd definitely be in touch.
That is... Yeah, that is awesome. No, we love the effort that's gone into that book, and those stories are just fantastic about how it all works and comes together, and some of the missteps where things are sold off. It's just
it's heartbreaking. Yeah. But it's such a you know, it existed in the 80s. It was this massive amount of material, and most people had not seen it up until that point. And so when Val did, I guess he did a poll on the org, which Dark Horse book do you want next? And a lot of people voted for that one. So Dark Horse, that sent a message to Dark Horse that like, okay, we're going to do this one. So
Danielle, can I ask you just on that topic, are you able to tell us anything, about whether or not Dark Horse has any future Master Universe plans in the horizon, anything? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Let's see. How do I put this? Don't give up hope. That's what I will say. Okay. That there are some definitely words, yeah. some very strong possibilities in the future. I am not going to say what those possibilities might be, but if you think about what fans might want, fans might.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for the insight.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, because there was a point where those were coming out thick and fast, the publications, and mm-hmm. and we sort of, I think we had a show where we're sort of saying, what's going to be the next one? You know, it's going to be coming soon, it's going to be announced. And sort of brainstorm what we'd like to see.
And PowerPoint came, yeah. and nothing was announced, and so, but Darren was crying into his mic.
But obviously, we'll buy multiple down here, so you know we're just screaming out for anything Dark Horse. If you're listening, you know, yeah, you got a big supporter base. I'm sure all around the world. So that is wonderful. All right, we might head into our next segment.
Vintage Toyline Retrospective.
You've got to come back to me.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
Dagger and action figure.
It is time for the modern toy line retrospective.
We're going to change that one.
Yeah, that's right. In post, we can weave some magic. But
current toy line retrospective.
Well, it is, and this is a fascinating part of this line. Is it? I would almost call this a single line, yet it spans different manufacturers, which is quite unusual for the one toy line. But we are talking today about Masters of the Universe Classics, which has been in what I guess you'd say November of 2018. This line would have been running for 10 years, which is an incredible amount of figures that we have gotten from this line. Started out off the back of the work that Mattel did in the 2000X relaunch and working with the Four Horsemen. And unfortunately, like we mentioned in the opening to this segment, that 2000X didn't really connect with the new mainstream audience that was coming. So old fans of Masters certainly got on board and really enjoyed the storytelling, the toys. But unfortunately, it just didn't hit the levels it needed to at mass market retail to warrant the continuation of the line. And it went through, I guess, a bit of a demise, which culminated in the Four Horsemen, in partnership with NECA, putting out some non-articulated 6-inch action figures, which were referred to as Stactions. And once that line ended, there was a void in which we saw famously that He-Man prototype at, was it San Diego?
Yeah, it was San Diego, Comic-Con 2007. Around the time that the Stactions ended, actually. The Stactions were, I believe, at the con, seeing sort of the end of that I think the con exclusive that year was the He-Man with the power sword.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. That raised year. And then we've got this beautiful cabinet that Mattel have got, that Scott Knightlake, also known as Toy Guru, was residing over, with a vintage Masters of the Universe toy collection in a battle scene display that was very iconic for people that love their Masters of the Universe battle royales. And this prototype He-Man that is articulated. It's taller than the 2002 line, but harkens back to a real vintage style, traditional He-Man.
And yeah, I'm trying to think back to the fan reaction at the time for seeing that figure, but it absolutely blew my mind to know that we'd gotten so close with 2000X and the Stactions. We hadn't quite rounded out the vintage line, but we'd gotten very close to rounding out a pretty good roster of the characters. Thinking this thing was dead and buried, and then to see the hope that this figure kind of illuminated on the franchise was just, I remember just being absolutely blown away and just praying. And I love the design aesthetic chosen, the fact that this was very reminiscent of the original figures. Chunky. And the bulk on the sculpt was just beautiful.
I can remember the weekend it dropped. I had to do an essay for uni. I had to finish it, and I couldn't go back to it. I just kept staring at this picture and this vintage battle scene display, trying to work out what it all meant. You know, was this gonna? This surely couldn't be a one-off offering, because you know you've got most of the vintage toy line there at San Diego. Where can this take us? And you know, it was a struggle to get back to the SA, which somehow I managed to do, but. Yeah, it just blew me away. To this day, I still think about how it felt then, you know, after having 2002 snatched away to have a chance of getting it back so soon. Just felt unreal.
Mm. The toy line was released via a website that Mattel created called Matty Collector, and this was going to be an online way to get these characters out to fans. And originally, they sort of slated that they would do one figure per month. And then that evolved into, you know, subscriptions, because at some point these were selling out super quick, and fans, and I know we were big here in Australia pushing for a sub model where we could lock these in, and that certainly came into play. And eventually they got to quarter size, beasts that might be released beasts. In the quarterly slots, oversized beasts. And then we had sometimes multiple figures coming month. And it just grew to a huge line, which is, I think, around, probably lost count, but about 200 odd figures to date, which got us all the original vintage Master of the Universe figures and a plethora of new characters, as well as Princess characters from Princess of Power, New Adventures, the mini comics. Yeah.
I can remember thinking, being really worried that the line wouldn't take off, because we'd been heartbroken with 2002. I can remember saying to Trent at the time, you know, they promised Faker for Toy Fair, we're at least going to get him. No matter how everything else goes, we're at least going to get him. You can't announce something for a con and then at a con not have it. So we're at least getting the Faker. And then you hear all the other things from Scott. Originally, they're going to be two-pack versus figures, or the line was going to end with Hordak. And you think, my God, you know, that we got so far and so deep and are still deep into it now. It just blows my mind that it did so well in the collecting community.
Yeah, one thing I just wanted to touch on quickly was the first time Adora was announced. And this is where the area of what can Mattel put out, what can they license, what do they have the rights in terms of the designs of certain characters to put out? And this was really a turning point, because did they have, you know, the right to do a Filmation style character based on Adora when she didn't have an original toy? What could they use in terms of references or style guides? And I think the fan community had a really big part to play in this, in terms of kind of maybe illuminating Mattel as to what some of the possibilities may be in a very complex legal area.
Around style guides. I remember Emiliano sort of spearheading that, and Danielle and some of the other people in the community really, really gunning hard for that. Because I can remember when Scott was saying, you know, we can do an Adora, but we don't have Filmation rights, thinking, well, do I really want an Adora that's Adora in name only? You know, I want one that looks like, you know, Adora.
That style guide, the look in the style guide, luckily, prior to them getting the Filmation rights, they looked like the Filmation characters. I mean, it was that, so they were able to use that loophole at the time to do, because, I mean, they could have done the Princess of Power characters and made them look like the toy line versions, but I mean, let's face it, most people wanted them to look like the cartoon versions of the Princess of Power characters. And I think that was a big problem I know I had in the 80s when the toys came out. They didn't look like the cartoon versions, you know, of the characters. So finally, after all these years, we were able to get Princess of Power characters that blended with the Masters of the Universe characters in the same aesthetic, and that looked like the cartoon. So they finally kind of were able to do that. It was a turning point
in a way that they'd only ever crossed over in animation before. Well,
I was fortunate enough to spend my honeymoon over in San Diego Comic Con in 2010. And I remember attending the Matty Collector panel, and at the end they had a voting thing. Yeah. Do you want Swiftwind white Filmation colors or pink toy colors? And of course, you know, the white was a landslide victory. But it was just cool that they were entertaining that idea, you know, that we could, as fans, vote and things like that. So I felt, you know, nice to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Maddie Collector, the Masters of the Universe Classics, I think, has probably been the most fan interactive line that... And I mean, if you think about it, this is a big corporation. It's sort of this always been this sort of inaccessible bubble, you know, Mattel. And this sort of online fan community was able to sort of influence certain choices and directions in the line. And that's kind of a really special thing. Like you don't see that. I mean, imagine in the 80s if when we were kids, if we had a say in like voting on which characters and things like that never would have happened.
We would have got
those
fan created characters like the eyeball and the, you know,
the net woman.
Yeah, Netler or whatever the name was. Yeah, crazy.
Well, and Danielle, I believe you're a big advocate for Karg, and here on Toy Power, we're all huge fans of the 1987 film and a lot of the designs that came out of that film. Karg being, I guess, a key villain from that film that you really need to have in your collection to add to the Evil Warriors. But again, the only characters we could really get out of that were the three that were made in the original toy line. But then when, I think it was still Brandon Sapinski that was working on the Classics line towards the end of the line, and then the reins were handed over to Super 7. And for that reveal to show Karg in a more of a comic book based interpretation of the character, but still a very, very iconic looking Karg character. Sort of, what was the influence levels and again fan community getting involved to try and make those sort of things happen and open up Mattel and Super 7's eyes to the possibilities of what could be done?
Well, I mean, like you said, Karg to me, he was like the missing evil warrior from that movie. I mean, we in the 80s we got Blade and Sorod. We didn't get Karg, and then in the Classics line, I know they didn't have the movie rights, but gosh, you know, it was like we knew there was that the magazine version. There was the U.S. magazine, and there was a different sort of color scheme for Karg in there. So I know a lot of fans were kind of pushing for that idea. I know Captain Atkin on the forums had started a thread about it, and I was a big proponent for Karg in the podcast. Of course, I mean, I had nothing to do with it happening. I just was a cheerleader for it because I really wanted it. But that loophole was there, and it was Brandon Sapinski. Actually, prior to the line transferring over to Super 7, Brandon kind of I think Scott had tried previously with a different, because I know management and stuff changes over at Mattel periodically, and I think he got blowback when Scott tried to get that through, but Brandon had better luck. Brandon really wanted to make Karg happen, so he actually did. He got it approved before Super 7 took over, and then when Super 7 kind of took the reins, he was definitely in the mix. He was, when they did the He-Man.org polls, for which, you know, which character do you want, the character selection polls, Karg came in at number one. So I mean, people wanted that figure. It was a highly demanded figure, and I think that helped also kind of give Brandon some you know, motivation, I guess, to kind of also get that through, because fans wanted that character. Of course, it's the magazine version of him as opposed to the movie colors, but he's pretty darn close.
Yeah, absolutely. Just in clarification, you're such a big Karg fan that you got Hunter S. Thompson, Hunter Knight to customize one for you. Is that correct?
Wow, I can't believe you remember that. Yes, he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a good memory, Pat.
Because I got Hunter Knight to do me a Camo Khan, thinking Camo Khan will never be Knight. So I thought, you know, Camo, and he and his work is amazing. And then when we got one for PowerCon, I was absolutely blown away. Like the fact that the line had gone that deep, that we'd got something, you know, that variant in the you know, in plastic form. Like, and I hold them both up, you know, at such a high level.
Yeah. Right now, I'm like resisting the urge to get more customs made of characters that I want for that very reason. Because I'm like,
actually happen.
Yeah.
It's like they might still get made. Like, yeah. You know, characters that we think might not happen still could happen. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You never know.
On that note, Danielle, you mentioned before, and you don't have to go into specifics, but you mentioned before that Karg and some of the others that Super 7 are now offering had been approved by Mattel. Do you happen to know offhand whether there's anything that was approved by Mattel in the dying days of Manny Collector that Super 7 haven't announced yet? You don't have to name them. Or at least not on the show. You can tell us after. But just out of curiosity.
I can say that the answer to that question is yes. But I can't say specifically what those things are.
But thank you for entertaining that question and not getting angry that I asked it. Ducks for cover.
I'll give you an addition. I would say look at the polls and what came in really at the top of the polls, and I think that will give you some insight.
Yeah, I think I've got a pretty good idea just from that. And I imagine the other three gentlemen in the room probably have their suspicions too.
Excellent.
Yeah, look,
thank you for that.
Look, the character roster that Classics has given us is absolutely incredible. PowerCon as well has been a big part, like Ben mentioned, getting us characters like Camo Khan. We got the red Green comic Granomir. Book version of Beast Man, obviously, yeah, Green Granomir, which I think from memory, maybe when I was in San Diego for 2011, might have been the voting then. I'm trying to remember if it was Green versus Red Granomir. Yeah.
I reckon it was, because you and I were obviously talking backwards and forwards online, and I reckon it was. And, you know, I was telling you, if you see Scott, tell him thank you, Sorceress, and all this stuff that he'd announced while you were over there. But, yeah, I reckon that was the vote.
But, and PowerCon's been an absolutely amazing source of getting us those sort of more obscure characters. I remember when the Errol McCarthy cardback black and white pictures sort of got released, and I think that might have been something, I'm trying to remember how they were dug up, but it was released on the .org, and just being blown away that he was this missing link potentially of what Wave 7 might look like, just, you know, chucking different parts to create new characters, which was very reminiscent of what a lot of Masters was all about. And some of those designs I just absolutely loved, and for me to get those as a PowerCon 3-pack, to get the sort of the Whiplash character and you know, a few extra Snake Men, the what ended up being sort of the Fisto and Hero kitbashed figure were just amazing. But my favorite from the Errol McCarthy cardbacks was the Snake Horde Trooper, which just looks so cool. And there was a white ninja, which we were sort of debating whether that was an actual good version of Ninja, or if it was just like Ninja. But I guess now in the continuity, whatever Errol McCarthy was thinking back in the day, seeing him hidden sort of on the back of the PowerCon pack, I guess he is a character that potentially you know, could be done down the track. And
I really want him. He's in my top 10 for sure.
Yeah, oh, such a cool looking figure. And Masters to me has always been a little bit about, for the evil character, there's sort of a good counterpart and vice versa, you know, to
an opposite number.
To Fisto and
Yin
Jitsu.
And Yang.
Yeah, and I think that would round out that concept very nicely. I guess, we're probably pretty close to being due for some official releases by Super 7. Hopefully there's some new product to show at San Diego coming up in the next month or so. It might be a nice opportunity. I know we were sort of having a bit of a messenger chat about figures we might like to see, but is it worth just sort of putting out there, you know, without any knowledge of what might be happening, but characters, the top two or three characters that everyone might want to see Super 7 put out as their next figures?
Sure.
I'll go first. For New Adventures, I've got into them pretty late, but I'm a bit of a New Adventures fan. Lizor. I have to have a Lizor in my collection. He's like the Predator of you know, Master Universe characters in my eyes. I just freaking love him. And I'm a bit advocate for the Meteorbs. Like, I'm a bit of a Transformers fan. That's what the part that appeals to me. So I'd like to see the Meteorbs in the in a classic-sized line, you know, yeah, be it two or three figures. That'd keep me happy. So, yeah, bring on those.
Well, technically, that's probably the last bastion of the vintage figures, yeah. I guess, if you call them that, because they did come on.
Yeah.
You
know. And I would definitely take a toy-coloured, like, scratch and sound Catra or something, like, you know, in the pink with the big black sort of, you know, ballet dress fur thing with the tail and stuff. Like, I just think, you know, some of those, she was good enough to get one of the few characters to get a variant.
Yep.
So let's, you know, highlight that with not only her in the line again as a variant, but in toy colors, you know, like that.
Absolutely. You know,
kill two birds with one stone. So that's enough from me anyway.
Frank?
I'm kind of the least knowledgeable Masters person in the room here, so I'm sure whatever I say has probably already been made. The classics, I look at the classics collection that these guys have and I'm staggered. And honestly, some of these obscure characters, I just go, do you know what? I know more about Masters than the average bear, but even some of these I go, nah, I've got no idea who that person is at all. in relation to that, with Super 7, do they have, assuming this She-Ra cartoon is successful, do they have rights to, if they were to make figures based on those designs? Does anyone know how that part of it works?
I haven't heard a word.
Okay, because that's something that I would. Oh, sorry, go for it.
Yeah, Princess of Power and Masters of the Universe are technically two separate licenses.
Mm.
However, they seem to have worked out some deal where, I mean, clearly, you know, the DC comics that came out recently were able to use the Princess of Power stuff, so they must have worked something out. And then Super 7 does have the rights to release Princess of Power characters, at least as far as classic Collector's Choice and Club Grayskull. Like, for Masters of the Universe classics, they can do She-Ra characters that were in the She-Ra cartoon. Obviously, we're getting Dialamog from the Filmation cartoon. As to this new cartoon, I am going to assume that if they wanted to do now, I don't know. I'm just speaking from my own assumption. If they were going to do cartoon-based toys, like a toy line specifically for the cartoon, I'm guessing Mattel would want to do that. But if they were going to release it, yeah, a mainstream release. But if they were going to do, say there's a new character in the cartoon that we never saw before and Super 7 wanted to do a Collector's Choice version of that character, I would think they would be able to do that. So they could do like the Collector's Choice version of a character that appears in that cartoon, but a specific style toy line. I am guessing it would be Mattel, but I don't quote me on that. I don't know for sure, but that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah,
that's great insight. Really, really appreciate that. Do you want to go next with your wish list?
I'll touch on a few. I guess the one I've been probably rabbiting on about for the last 5 years is Master Sebrian, because I think, and he's I'm trying to think where he came on some of the polls. I remember seeing a poll where he didn't fare too well, and I'm like, oh man, that's not boding well for my Master Sebrian. But I just feel he's a main character in that New Adventures cartoon. He is the mentor character in that. And I feel like when a character has such a presence on screen, they almost deserve a figure. But, you know, to the point maybe a lot of people don't want sort of an old man that's not a sort of muscle-down style of character. So that's probably not in his favor. I'm a big fan of the Alina episode, A Friend in Need, from Filmation.
My very first episode in 1983.
Yes.
Sold my parents on it because it was an anti drug message.
I think, it's a beautiful figure and a very impactful story. So I'd like to see Alina. And the big one, I'm a big fan of the work by Larry Houston on the mini comics. He was pretty prolific, I guess, as a penciler. And he was really great because he sort of asked the question, here's a character that I'm writing for. Can I make them, an Indian character, an American Indian character, or can I make them an Asian character? So he added a lot of diversity to the Masters universe. And one character I just love, and there's a lot that I love the work of Larry Houston that I could see being made into figures, but Garn for me is a big one. Love both the Larry Houston version and what was the Garn version in the Filmation cartoon series as well. So I'd take either or. And I think we're developing now with sort of Lodar, having gotten Geldor in the past, we've got a nice representation of Larry Houston characters. So that's one for me as well.
Yeah.
So for me, I guess I have one of my interests that I get from my mom, I guess, is family tree. So and that sort of thing. So I'd really like to see the family tree Adam and Adora expanded in toy form. So I'm thinking King Miro or Captain Miro would be a really, really cool figure to get. I know, given what Trent said about people not necessarily wanting an old man figure, I've probably got, you know, two chances, Buckley's and none, but you can hope. I'd also like Katrina and General Tataran and Hunger the Harpy, and, you know, I could go on.
How many did we say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've already said more than what I'm allowed to say. I was just going to say, I could go on all week. Yeah. But
I do the same thing. I already go.
Yeah, well, that is so true.
What about yourself, Danielle? Yeah. What's your biggest...
Do you have a few hours? All of the ones you guys named are definitely in my list. I think I posted a list on the org of like over 100 characters that I still want to see made in classics.
I'll take them for
you. But some of my top ones are, I'd really like to get the three Twiggets, the Sprag, Spratina, and Sprocker, as a three pack or as pack-ins, because I know it's sort of like how you said with Master Severian, where it's kind of like, you feel like, oh, some people don't want him because he's an old man, but he's a very prominent character in that series, and I would love Master Severian. By the same token, I would love those three Twiggit characters because they were in so many episodes of the She-Ra cartoon. Like, they played pivotal roles in some of those episodes, so I would definitely like to get them, and I think they would look cool in the Great Rebellion display. Like, it adds some size diversity and color diversity. Absolutely. There's a lot of, like, you know, blues and pinks and purples in there. It'd be nice to get a little more green mixed in there. So they're gonna be my next Holy Grail. So them, I'd like to get. I know she's a newer character, but I think Lady Slither is really cool. Yes. With the tail. You know, Axel did a great design for her with it. At first, I was like, wasn't too fussed by Lady Slither when I saw the picture in the mini comic, but then when I saw her with the tail, with the snake tail, I was like, oh my god, she reminds me of Medusa in Clash of the Titans. Such a mythological looking character, and would fit so well with the rest of the Snake Men, and has kind of like an opposite thing going with King Hiss, where King he has
Queen.
The
King Hiss and Queen. Yeah, definitely.
And I'd love to get her, and then I would also like, this one is kind of obscure, Shirella from the, who is in the classics continuity, I guess, before she became the goddess, she was Shirella, and that comes from the vintage style guide from 1987, where there was a tribal chiefess who helped train Hero, and so a lot of people sort of assume that the archer woman on the Megator box art was Shirella. And that it was never like confirmed or anything, but it since has become like the image for Shirella. And in fact, in that the last classics mini comic, you do see her, and they did use that design for her. So I would like to get her to put with Hero and Eldor.
Absolutely.
And sort of a pre-turning. You know, I think it would be cool to get her. And then, like I said, I could keep going with this. There are so many characters that I Slammerai, like I said, I would want.
Gray, the Secret Identity of Hero.
Gray. I'd love all of the new adventures. Like, I wish they would complete the new adventures characters. Like, all of those are great. Like, you know, like, they look cool at and classics. Like what in about the 80s, you should be cool too. Yeah, she would be. Yeah, absolutely. Another one I'd really like is I don't want to just keep nattering on with them because we're going to be here a while. But there are some obscure ones that I like that I doubt will ever get made. I think I mentioned to you guys in a PM, like, there's this character in the Italian comics called Minox or Minox. I don't know how you'd pronounce it, but he's a Minotaur guy, but he's a cyborg Minotaur.
Cool.
He was created by Skeletor. Like, when I was doing the character guide, I, like, discovered all these, like, characters from different iterations of Masters of the Universe from all over the world. And it's like some of the Brazilian characters are amazingly cool. Like there's this character Cesar, who's this aquatic villainous, who's like a scale. She has scales. She's blue. She has scales and kind of fins on. So there's like a female merman, I guess, you know, but these characters I doubt will ever get made, but you know, they're just kind of neat characters. And Hung of the Harpy, of course, would be definitely phenomenal. Yeah, you know, just a cool, or the King Miro, I agree, would be great. The Skeleton Warriors, I think, would be cool. So many good ones. Tataran, Prince Dacon would be cool.
Yes.
Do you ever
talk to Brian Flynn about your ideas? Because I feel, you know, you've got a lot to contribute to what could be coming.
I mean, I've talked to Brian a couple of times, but I don't want to be presumptuous and be like, hey, you should do this. But if I get a chance to talk to him at PowerCon, I probably will unload on him.
By the sounds of it, everyone does do that.
If
you happen to think of it, and it doesn't matter if you don't, Danielle, but if you happen to think of the mentioning to him, there are four Aussie podcasters that would love to chat to him anytime he's available for a podcasting session. He would he'd be very welcome.
So just changing the subject a little bit, we here at Toy Power Podcast, we talk a lot of toy lines, and obviously, one of the issues that a common thing with toy collectors is how do you keep your loose toy on the shelf, right? You know, without falling over, especially down here in the heat and stuff, climate changes and things, ankles get loose, they fall off. And I'll never forget your little story about how you counteracted this problem by having a little mattress at the bottom of your collection. And I think am I correct in saying that you had someone around to have a look at the question, the collection, and they asked, do you sleep here or something? No, it's to soften the blow when they fall down off the shelf. Yeah.
Such an awesome idea.
Yes, I did. But I no longer have that there because there were too many questions raised when people were coming through. Somebody asked if I played with the figures on that, like, you know, like a 5-year-old. I was like, no, I don't want them to break because they're expensive. Yeah. So it was like a piece of foam, a thick piece of foam I had there with a carpet over it, and I realized this just doesn't look good. So I need to buy a some sort of rug or something, like maybe a shag carpet or something to put under there. But I've been using I've used sticky tack, and there's this stuff called it's some kind of stuff you mop the floor with. I forgot what it was called. Pledge Future Shine or something, and you it doesn't damage the figures. It's just like this sort of viscous cleaning product, and you dip a brush into it, and you kind of paint it into the ankle joint, and then kind of move it back and forth to work it in, and then you let it dry, and then it actually holds it in place pretty well. Several fans do this. There's a thread about it on the org, and I had reassurances from many people that it doesn't damage the figures, and I did it years ago, and they've been pretty good. I have a few that dive off the shelf periodically, but for the most part, they've been pretty good.
Clear nail varnish as also works. I've heard is another trick.
Yeah.
Trick.
Yep.
Thing. So yeah, sounds like a very similar product and same sort of solution to fixing those. loose ankles and things. But yeah, I just thought that was a cool little story to that we can all share in the woes of things falling off the shelf and stuff.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter what you collect in the toy collecting community, you've all got a falling off the shelf story somewhere.
Definitely.
Well, one time I walked into the room and Madam Raz was like in the middle of the room. I was like, how did that happen?
She crashed through on the way from one end of the room.
I've had toys fall off the shelf and I'll be like, oh, that's cool. And like, literally watched the sword, jump off into wherever and then cannot for the life of me find that sword. And I get so paranoid. Like, I get like, where did it go? And then it'll be like on the second shelf above from the bottom shelf, like how did it jump up there without me seeing it? But for that 5 minutes, you're so damn paranoid that it's gone. Like, where did the hell did it go? How did it disappear like that?
Yeah, have you seen your room, Ben? I can see how it disappeared.
The one that scared me once was Battle Armor Faker. I had him on a high shelf and he fell. I was worried that he broke because that figure is so expensive now get. Yeah. And I was like, no, I hope Battle Armor Faker didn't break. Yeah. Luckily, he was fine and I moved him way to the back of the shelves.
For me, I'm not really concerned too much about like one figure falling off the shelf. It's them grabbing all the other figures around them and taking them down with them.
Or
worse off, like if a weapon breaks, that it's irreplaceable. Most of the time it's like you just cannot replace that weapon ever again unless you buy the figure carded or something and complete.
Yeah, I want to eventually someday I want to get nice display cases, like a glass display cases, but I don't really have room for them right now and they're really expensive and I'm not good at assembling display cases, but someday I am going to get a nice glass display case because I see some of these collections, people post their pictures online and they look really nice, like a loose displayed collection and they're a lot easier to dust. Like I can't really dust these. There's so many. I just get, Val suggested this to me, a can of compressed air and just kind of just blow the dust off. It doesn't really clean the room because it blows the dust everywhere, but it blows them off of the figures and then I can like vacuum or... after that, but that's I haven't done that in a little while. I need to get around to doing that. I should not admit that in public.
You're in good company. It's a struggle we all live with, how to deal with keeping your toys pristine.
Definitely.
And there's still more figures to come, so it's like, where are we going to put all of these new figures that are coming and making room on the shelves for them, and trying to find spots for them because it's getting pretty crowded. I don't know about you guys, but it's getting kind of crowded on the shelves here.
It is. I keep telling myself it's for a good cause and then it's a good problem to have. But
yes, absolutely.
It's better than Master Universe.
I mean, and by sounds of some of those lists that fans have compiled in their heads, the line could go on for a while. There's a lot of great characters to still put out, so hugely excited to see where it's going to come. And really looking forward to obviously San Diego and PowerCon where there may be some reveals. So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that you go ahead, because I was just going to segue into PowerCon. So
I was going to say Eric and I keep name dropping characters and bios that we can, like, if we mention, Master Severian and Malaktha and stuff, like maybe more people will want them if we work them into the story,
make
so
them
we
more
do,
mainstream.
If they organically fit into it, we kind of just be like, let's name drop this character. Yeah, King Miro, he should have had a figure by now. Everybody wants that 2000X style King Miro. Let's keep mentioning King, bring up King Miro a few times, and see what happens. Not that I know if that will have any effect other than annoying people that were name dropping all these characters.
So, I like the way you think.
Yeah.
You gotta think about building the line somehow.
You do. And you're in a wonderful position. So you mentioned yourself and was it Eric Treadaway that is involved in the buyers as well?
No, it's Eric Marshall he's I never know how to pronounce it, Gibagok or Gibago. Jibagok on the org, and he's been doing the unofficial bios for years. So, and he's done quite a bit of work on the brand design wise because he's a very talented artist as well. So he's done some, like, he helped design the packaging for the Ultimates figures with the the logo. He redid the Masters of the Universe logo and stuff on the package, and Axel of course did the card back artwork and stuff. So Eric has done quite a bit of stuff on the brand.
Yeah, no, they're beautiful, those Ultimates. The packaging, that's probably, if I had one complaint on the line, it would be, because I'm a mint on card collector predominantly, so for classics, I because they're so cool, I buy one of each, one to keep mint on card and one to keep loose in front of it. And I guess my biggest complaint is that I would have loved to see that Ultimate packaging all the way through. And I know where that sort of stemmed from. I know that the grayscale style of packaging was really designed for the King He-Man. Sorry, I'm getting the name wrong.
King Grayskull, the
first con exclusive King Grayskull figure. When they, I guess, went to the regular figures, they had the artwork ready to go, and that was just made the most sense to kind of continue with that.
Yeah, and Scott said they didn't have the budget to go and do a vintage packaging.
It's unfortunate. I think most fans would agree, you know, everybody kind of would have preferred that red burst from the vintage line. I mean, that would have just been perfect. It's the yellow, but we're so deep into the line at this point that it's like, why change it now?
Oh, agreed. Yeah. I bought a whole heap of those protectors, so I'd hate for them to change it now. I'd have nowhere to put those mint on card protectors. So now that's wonderful that you're able to contribute to the bios and have a sneaky way to try and get characters made. So I love your thought process, Danielle. That's wonderful.
I do too. It's clever lobbying.
Just as we round out this episode, obviously San Diego is coming up, but a wonderful event for any He-Man fan that's coming up is the 2018 edition of PowerCon. And as we understand, you assist with getting the different guests to the con. Just maybe if you wanted to talk to how that's going and how that's shaping up, because there's been a number of big names obviously announced for 2018. If you wanted just to talk a little bit to that quickly.
Sure. PowerCon, I've been, since the first one, Val asked me if I wanted to be the guest coordinator for the con. So that typically just entails sort of finding contact information for people that worked on the various iterations of the brand, and then reaching out to them and kind of explaining what the con is, or if they've been there before, to just invite them back. And at first it was sort of a free-for-all. Like, we invited, it was just huge. 2013 was just a massive guest list of from every kind of corner of the brand. And I think, starting last year, Val decided to sort of focus on specific anniversaries. So last year we celebrated the anniversary of the MYP cartoon and also the Power Tour. So, and the movie, the 87 movie. So the guests centered, we're focused on those aspects. This year, we're celebrating the 35th anniversary of the Filmation He-Man cartoon and the Masters of the Universe Classics, the 10th anniversary of Classics. So we have quite a few guests coming, some of which have been there before, and some new ones. We have Robert Lamb coming back who was a writer at Filmation and also a storyboard artist at Filmation, very beloved sort of figure, very friendly with the fans. Robbie London is coming for the first time from the Filmation cartoon, and he was a writer on the cartoon and wrote for many other cartoons as well, including G.I. Joe and Captain Planet and some of those other shows. Really cool guy. We got Gwen Wetzler is coming. I don't know if we've announced her yet, but she's going to be coming.
Be breaking news on Toy Power. I love that. she's great. I've seen a lot of her commentaries and interviews on the documentaries for the DVDs, and you can see she really had a real passion for both He-Man and She-Ra, so she'd be a great guest, I reckon.
Yeah, she was there, I think it was 2011 or 2012, and she's great. I had a phone conversation with her a few weeks back, and she told me a lot of stories about just being, she was one of the first sort of women working in animation, and as a director, I think she was the first female animation director. So she told me stories about, you know, the challenges that she faced at that time and sort of convincing people that she was able to do the jobs very well, in fact. So she's since become quite a beloved figure among fans. Even though it's not the anniversary of the toy line, that was last year too, we celebrated the anniversary of the toy line, but Mark and Rebecca Taylor are both coming this year as one of the parents of Masters of the Universe.
That is awesome.
One of the main creators behind Masters of the Universe. I'm not going to say the creator in case
Roger Sweet might be listening.
We might have lost Roger as a listener if you said that. So we appreciate you not. One of many people that built the Masters of the Universe we know and love today.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. So, I mean, fans I know are very excited about Mark Taylor. And then some of the people who worked on classics as well. Scott Knightlake is coming, Toy Guru. I know he can be a divisive figure, but, honestly, like online, I know a lot of people would have a lot of get angry with Scott and stuff. But in person, he's always like super friendly with fans and everybody wants to talk to him. And I will tell you this, as much flack as that guy got, when we used to do the dinners, we don't do this anymore. We used to have the Roast Google dinner at PowerCon where fans could have this really nice dinner at the hotel ballroom, and they could sit with guests, and the guests would come, and we'd have maybe three or four guests at a table plus maybe four or five fans sitting with the guests. And the fans that bought tickets to that, we would ask them, it was one of the things I had to ask was like, who do you want to sit with? Who are your top five choices of guests you would like to be seated with? Scott was, every time Scott was there, he was the number one guest at that time because he was the brand manager from Classics. So everybody wanted to pick his brain and sit with him at the table. So he's going to be there this year. Brandon Sapinski is coming, who was as we talked about earlier, one of the designers for Classics, and quite a few other folks. The guest list is pretty substantial this year. Unfortunately, we don't have any voice actors this year. Alan Oppenheimer was going to come, but he had to cancel. He couldn't make it. And I think Melindy Britt also couldn't come, even though it's not the She-Ra anniversary, but we were going to have her, but I don't believe she couldn't make it. So we don't have voice actors this year, but we have had them there quite a few times in the past. And I think that's the whole thing behind having anniversary shows, is to mix it up a little bit and have a different group of guests every year. So you can, the experience is different every time you come to the con, as opposed to sort of repeating what we had the previous year.
Good call. Sounds wonderful. We're so far away, being here in Australia on the other side of the world. I've never been to a PowerCon, but I was lucky enough to be in San Diego in 2011 for the San Diego Comic-Con, and Val, the absolute legend that he is, sent out an invite to meet at the Irish pub that's just a couple of blocks away from the con, and I went along, and it was, in all seriousness, the absolute highlight of my holiday to the States that night. The show that Val put on, I remember he busted out an old school Scotch whiskey at one point to celebrate how the line was doing. I guess because there were so many struggles. I chatted to a number of the Mattel guys. Terry Higuchi was great. Bill Beneke was there, and had some great conversations with those guys. Eric Treadaway had a lovely chat with him. Just the chatting to the fans and meeting the fans. I met Paul Justice, absolute legend.
Yes. Such a nice guy.
The most lovely guy. And we were just always at the con, we were always just like kept going back to the Mattel booth and just like looking at the figures. And I'd see him there again. I'm like, yeah, back again for another look. He's like, yep. But just meeting the fan community was one of the most wonderful experiences I've had. And I can only imagine that PowerCon kind of just amplifies that feeling and is just the most wonderful event to attend.
Trent, you guys would love it. If you take that power party at Hennessy's Irish Pub, that feel and just apply that to the entire weekend, and that's what it is. It's like a nonstop He-Man and She-Ra extravaganza party where there's a lot of warmth and camaraderie. I mean, you see a lot of fans online arguing or whatever. They get upset about stuff. You don't see that at PowerCon. It's just, I don't know. I think it's something about being face-to-face and just hanging out with everybody and having fun. It's about having fun with our hobby and chatting with fellow fans and with creators that just come and hang out with you, like Brian Dobson, the voice of Skeletor from MYP. Like he hangs out with all the fans and has a couple of drinks with them, and it's always just such a great feel. I think it is a long flight. I know Jack Starro from the Facebook He-Man communities and stuff. He came out a couple of years ago, and I know it was a really long flight for him because you're not only flying to the States, so you're going all the way to California. So yeah. it's a pretty long way, but well worth it if you ever get the opportunity to do it. I think you guys would. I like it more than San Diego. I've kind of stopped going to San Diego because while I enjoyed San Diego, I found that it was after a few years, it wore me down because it's just so overwhelmingly huge. There's so many people.
PowerCon is definitely on my bucket list. Yeah. I can't reiterate that enough. I really, really, it is an absolute dream to get there. And I've had that conversation online with Val as well. You know, it's definitely not that I don't want to go. I pretty badly want to go. Like, I can't tell you how badly. But, the stars just haven't aligned yet.
You got to come, Darren. I know you would love it.
I'd love it.
someday. What next year? I don't know what next year is. I think it is the New Adventures anniversary. And then the year after that is the Princess of Power cartoon anniversary. But we'll have tons of stuff going on. And if you can figure out a way to get there, I think you'll really enjoy it. And then the after hours stuff is really fun too. Like, you know, we have panels during the day with about the different topics, but then at night, everyone kind of cuts loose. We party a little bit. You know, we have some fun panels. There's usually some alcoholic beverage involved at night, and screenings. We do screenings. Like we screened that Power Grayskull documentary last year. Yeah. And, you know, James E. Talk showed a clip from his Return of Faker that he's working on. Nice. There was some really cool stuff going on. So I highly encourage, if you can, to make it out. I know it's quite a long ways, and it's not cheap to fly internationally. But if you can come out at some point, come as a group and do a live podcast from.
You're tempting us. I'm booking some flights. No, that is awesome.
What's the old saying? I'll do it now and apologize later.
Yep.
Well,
and Leanne, who you had on the podcast, who's a dear friend as well. I love Leanne. She was she's been a guest a few times because she's worked on the comics and stuff.
Yeah, so she's, Leanne's awesome, and she's talked very highly of PowerCon.
Oh, we don't even need to sell it. Like, it's not even a thing that you need to promote to this sort of group. It just sells itself. Like, it's just a wonderful thing. And we've got a fan of the show who is our person on the ground, Jose Gonzalez. So he'll sort of be feeding us information this time round. As our foreign correspondent to Toy Power. So, but yeah, hopefully if we can align it for next year, we would all love to get down there for that. So
listeners, if you have Facebook, you can keep track of what's happening at PowerCon to some degree through the Toy Power Facebook page, because we will be feeding it through.
I thought you were going to direct them to a Kickstarter page that you just created 5 seconds ago to fund our way there.
There's an idea. Yeah, we'll do a Kickstarter page for everyone. Get toy power to PowerCon 2019.
I know one thing Val is doing, I think we're doing this year, is he wants to do like a, in the past we've done like a roasted masters panel, which is the Roast Google Dinner and Masters cast did like a joint live podcast at PowerCon, but I think this year Val is doing like all He-Man podcasts, anybody from a He-Man podcast. And kind of like getting on a panel. So if one of you guys makes it out, let Val know, because maybe you might be able to get you on that panel.
You never know your luck. Thank you for coming on, Danielle. We really appreciate it, you coming on the show. It's been fantastic having you here, and we definitely want you to come back in the future. You've been a terrific guest.
It's been my pleasure, guys. Anytime, and thank you so much for having me on. I hope I didn't put your listeners to sleep.
No, it's been very interesting.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
And just obviously, you're a big part of PowerCon and all that. Tell our listeners where to find you. You know, your Penny Dreadful outlet and things like that. Just a quick spiel on where they can find you if they want to know more about you and all that sort of jazz.
Sure. One of the things that I did for 10 years was I hosted a horror movie show on local television here in the New England part of the states, and it's called Shilling Shockers. So if you want to find out more about it, it's shillingshockers.com, and you can find out more about my spooky antics on there. And then I'm also on Facebook as well, so you can find me on there, and it's Penny Dreadful on that.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you again. And I just wanted to also apologize for coughing so much while you've been on the show.
I feel better.
It's nothing personal. just at that end cycle, unfortunately, where I've got that lingering cough. But like I said, it's been sensational having you here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Danielle, for joining us today. We've absolutely had a blast for this episode of Toy Power, and we would love to have you back on in the future, because I think we've only scratched the surface of Masters and toys in general. So thank you so much for your time.
I reckon we have, and I reckon perhaps a good time to have you back could be sometime after PowerCon.
And any news that you want to share with us about new upcoming Dark Horse projects, a podcast that's very willing to listen.
Absolutely. If you ever wanted to break news on something, we could get the episode up pretty quick.
Because we are in the future over here.
Yes. Yeah, we are. And then I'll
enroll in the witness protection program. I'll reveal everything, and then I'll disappear off the radar. Or we can go over our list of 100 hundreds of figures and do a 24-hour podcast where we should list off every character.
We should do that. We should do like a live rolling, live now, 24 hours.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys. And it was an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And thank you for staying up so late to talk. It's like, what, 2 a.m. there now, or 2:30 in the morning or something?
It's 20 to 2.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. So by the time I crawl into bed, I have to get up again.
That is awesome. On that note, we will wrap this special episode of Toy Power. Huge thank you to Danielle for joining us today for this episode. And thank you as well for tuning in. We really appreciate all our listeners' support on Toy Power. Special shout out to our patrons, Jose Gonzalez, Chris Wisdom, Lux Toy Collector, and Brett G. Thank you so much for your support, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey, everyone.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but...